right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of SaberSims DFS Office Hours. Today is Friday, January 17th of 2025, and looking ahead here, we have a two-game NHL main slate as well as a seven-game NBA main slate, so it should be a fun day of DFS. Those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS-related questions, get your questions in. One of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual support channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. And then it is Friday, so we do have our build review show coming up after this one at 5 p.m. Eastern. All right. With that said, let's get SaberSim up, and let's get some questions here in the queue. So a couple questions to get us started. Plenty here. It seems like one from Jay Sams Jr. that Henry jumped in and helped out with. A couple on that front. So we will definitely hit all of these and queuing them up right now. A little questions about value. A couple more here from Rice, from Mamba, and from Zach. So going to be pretty busy to start the show. We'll just work through these one at a time, top down, and answer more questions as they roll in. All right, queuing up the last question right now. And we are all set. All right, first question. When it has this message, how can we tell what is getting the update, if it's ownership or fantasy score or both? So the picture included with this question is in regards to this icon here, basically saying like there's like an update to fantasy points that's available. That's something new, in case you guys haven't noticed it yet. We basically, when Sims run behind the scenes, we now do two things. There's sometimes like a notification that comes up on the right hand side that says like, hey, projection adjustment or projection, new projections like available. And then this refresh projections icon turns green. So what these are doing are telling you like, hey, you know, there are new projections that you might want to look at. When you click this icon, it's going to give you those new projection updates in the app. Players Move, it's going to move them for you. A couple other things happen, right? So if you hover over the timestamp, I'm going to see the last time that the projections got updated. And then I'm also going to see the last time that ownership got updated. Okay. So with regards to projections and ownership, the way that this works is that ownership runs after projections, basically the schedule for that gets more frequent as we get closer to the slate start time. So like earlier in the day, they don't run as frequently, but as we get about like 2 to 3 hours near lock, what ends up happening is that projections update and then ownership runs typically in less than 5 minutes. As we're within an hour to lock, it gets even shorter. It might get down to like 1 or 2 minutes, but ownership always follows projections. So I think that's like an important thing that I want to drive home. You're not going to see updates to ownership without there first being a new sim that completed. Because what happens is we're running like an ownership build, and a big part of the ownership build are the projections and the values of the players, etc. So when those projections update, the ownership build gets rerun, the ownership projections end up changing. So that's what happens there. Now, as far as how can we tell what is getting updated? This was like another part of the question. The best place, honestly, is probably going to be in the Discord, in the lineup alert channels. If you pull those up, I'll just do that. Pulling them up now. All right. All right. So if I'm in the Discord, right, and I go like NBA lineup alerts, this is going to be the best place to get updates about what is changing, right? Anytime a player moves, I believe it's either 1 point or 1.5 points. I do think it's 1 point because looking at Corey Kispert here, you're going to see the builder tell you that, right? Kuzma goes from 31.7 to 29.4. Tyus Jones goes from 26.5 to 25.1. This is the best place to get that information. You're not really going to find it anywhere else. So I would just keep an eye on those alert channels. It'll show you when players' projections are updating. All right. Good stuff there. Next question. If we are playing a small field, I'm assuming this meant GPP, how do we change the settings so the builder builds for the correct contest we are entering? So we don't have the drop downs anymore. You know, I know people who use SaberSim for a long time are familiar with, like, you go to the settings, you go to the drop downs, you set it for the type of contest you're playing, the sliders change, and you build from there, right? We've been taking a little bit different approach, and I'll talk about it here. So let me just kick off some lineups while we talk about it. So sliders are specifically set based on the number of games on the slate. And the reason for that is we're basically trying to avoid double counting a little more. And before, what you would do is, like, you would set, like, your style. You would set, is it like a single entry? How many entrants are there, et cetera, right? Well, if you look at SaberScore counts for the number of players in your contest, right? Like, this one is like, hey, 10K to 50K entrants, right? So what we mostly care about is how big are your contests, right? So the sliders look at how many games are on the slate, and then SaberScore is looking at how many entrants there are in your contest. So, like, before, you know, like, we have two sliders now, right? We used to have three sliders. We used to have an ownership fade slider as well, where the ownership fade would basically take into account player ownership. But the reason we removed that one, right, was because SaberScore is taking into account ownership. If I go into any one of these SaberScores, there is an ownership variable, right? Well, in our SaberScores, we're taking into account the contest size. So we're trying to avoid double counting, like, again here, basically. Like, first it was ownership fade, now it's kind of contest size. What we found is, like, similar size contests typically play the sliders don't change that much when the contest size is, like, kind of the same. Like, I at least I remember, you know, seeing, like, 20 max versus 150 max sliders were, like, always, like, really, really close together, even if, you know, the number of entries in your contest, like, changed. And, like, 130 lineups is a big difference. So that's what's going on there. So if you want to go in here and you want to adjust sliders, go for it. We don't recommend doing it. And we think that the sliders based on slate size are still very, very good and the best options that are, we're obviously going to put them at the defaults that we think are the best based on what we found in our back testing. All right, next question. What does the term value player mean? And if it's based on a player going 5X their salary, would a 10K player that hits 5X his salary be considered a value play? Okay, good question. So it's going to depend on the sport a little bit. You know, you're typically just going to get higher scores in a sport like NBA, and projections are going to be higher. Like, you're never going to see a football player highest we see football players is, you know, somewhere in, like, high 20s. I don't know if anybody's ever been projected for 30, maybe, but you know, that's obviously half of what you're going to see in a sport like NBA, right? So I'll talk about this in terms of NBA. Typically a value play, right? What that means, in to me at least, is typically like a player who's usually over 6 value. If you see that, that usually means that this player is mispriced for the amount of time they're going to play, right? So, like, this is basically why there is edge in DFS. It's because the sites have to release the salaries before all the news about the slate is out. So, like, for instance, you know, Daniel Theis here, highest value play on the slate, 6.84. Well, he is not the, you know, normal starting center for this team. You know, Zion plays like center sometimes, I think. And then I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's like French. It's like Missy is their other center who like typically plays a lot, right? So if we just like go to the Pelicans and then I come in here and it's like, okay, Zion is playing, but Missy is out. So I'm assuming what we're expecting here is we are expecting Thies to take Missy's minutes. And the fact that Thies is 3,100 salary means that he's going to get more minutes than he usually does, right? Like we are showing him at 26 minutes and he's usually somebody who's playing like somewhere in like the 10 to 20 minute range. So he becomes a value play because when DraftKings released these salaries, they probably didn't know that Missy was going to be out and that was going to lead to additional minutes for Thies here, right? So he's effectively like mispriced for the amount of time that he's expected to play. That is considered a value play, right? Now, in terms of like high-priced players, I don't know at what point the players like on DraftKings get like the little fire symbol, you know, when they're like, they're doing so good, they're outscoring their salary by X percent, right? I don't know if it's 5X. I don't know if it's 6X. I do know it changes by sport, right? We're talking about like NFL versus NBA. So you can typically look like for that little fire symbol. And if a player is getting to that range, then they're obviously outperforming their projection and like doing really well. But typically like a 6 value for NBA is usually something that ends up being pretty good. All right, next question. If the simulations shouldn't be manipulated like an optimizer with rules and player pools, then how should they be adjusted? What factors should we focus on? How many times should we run the simulations in SaberSim to achieve optimal results? And is there a point where running more simulations yields diminishing returns? Why or why not? Okay, good question. Excuse me. So I'm not sure if I like 100% agree with the statement the simulations shouldn't be manipulated. It's going to depend on what you're trying to achieve, right? Because everybody approaches this problem of, you know, winning money at DFS differently, right? You know, you mentioned rules, right? So I think rules can be good, right? We come in from the approach that you don't need rules in order to build good lineups, that SaberSim is going to build you good lineups without rules. Doesn't mean you can't use them. Doesn't mean you can't find value in setting rules, right? When you're using rules, you should always be trying to accomplish something that the builder is not doing for you by itself, right? For instance, somebody asked the other day, like, hey, how do I avoid playing 5 players from the same team? And you might ask, you know, one SaberSim user, like, oh yeah, I never want to play, you know, 5 players from the same team. But then you ask somebody else and they're like, well, if, you know, that team has like a bunch of high priced players out and, you know, it's like a high scoring game environment and there are a bunch of cheap players, then like, sure, you know, I'm fine playing 5 players from the same team. I think a good example would be, I think earlier this week when the Hawks had, you know, Trae Young and Jalen Johnson out and they had somebody else out too. I don't remember. Might've been DeAndre Hunter. Those were like 3 high salary, high usage players. And it obviously leads to a bunch of extra opportunities for lower salary players, right? So it's going to depend who you ask, right? For the player who's like, I never want to play 5 players from a team. Great. You know, it's an opportunity to use a rule, set a rule. That way you never get that outcome. That is a perfectly fine opportunity to, you know, manipulate the outcomes that the builder creates for you, right? Ultimately, you always want to be comfortable with the lineups that you're getting on the other side. So I just want to be clear. Like I think it's totally fine to make manual adjustments and adjust projections, set rules. We don't have rules that we recommend because, you know, if we thought there were good things that the builder should be doing by itself, then we would frankly try and figure out a way to do it. But it is totally okay to curate your player pool. It is totally okay to, you know, X guys, set minimax exposures. You know, we make those things available so you can do it, right? But we don't think you have to do it in order to win. So I just want to be clear on that point. Okay, what factors should we focus on? How many times should we run the sims to achieve optimal results? So I don't think you need to, like, I don't think your lineups are going to get better, you know, the more times you run the sims or anything like that. You know, every time you're building lineups, your lineups are going to be like a little bit different. And then when we run the contest sim, you know, you're running it 100,000 times, right? I don't think, you know, there is like something where it's like, if you run it, you know, three times, it's better than running it, you know, one time or anything like that. Like the third time is like the money time, right? Like, I don't really think you should think like that. And then, you know, this kind of comes down, like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but we used to not run the contest sim 100,000 times. I think there was a point where we ran it like 50,000 times. There was a time where we ran it like 20,000 times. You know, we kind of started from that starting point, and then we realized, like, in our back testing, like, hey, you know, results at 20,000 are a little noisy. Let's up it. And then we looked at like 50,000, and then like our back testing, we're like, hey, results at 50,000 are a little noisy. Let's up it. And then now, you know, we're doing 100,000 sims, right? We feel that like 100,000 sims, the information that you get back is actually, you know, very, very sound and not as noisy, right? So just kind of another example of like, hey, if we thought a bigger number was better, we would just do that for you, right? So I just want to like kind of hit on like each one of these points, but I think like what the question is like really getting to, like, where can I add value to SaberSim, right? So I think all those things that we talked about before are fine. I think curating a player pool, totally fine. I think minimax exposures, I think projection adjustments, filters, rules, again, all totally fine. Feel free to do those and just, you know, try and be objective with yourself about what impact you're having on your lineups. Is the impact you're having good? Is the impact you're having bad? Is it neutral? And are you like, quote unquote, wasting time? And you could figure out a different way to add value that you could use that same amount of allotted time for, right? That's something I think about a lot, where it's like, okay, I'm spending, you know, X amount of time doing this activity. Am I right more than I'm wrong? Right. And I'll grade myself like, okay, hey, over the past week, you know, I was right about 65% of my adjustments. Like, hey, that's pretty good. You know what I mean? If I was like 52%, 51%, and like always kind of just like breaking even, you know, maybe I could use that time, figure out some other way to use that time where it actually ends up being more of a benefit than more of like a break-even type of venture. So that's the way I'd really try and think about, you know, spending time researching, analyzing, etc. All right. Next question. For NBA DFS, late swap, is it recommended to check the option to force the original lineup? Do you recommend doing late swaps all at the same time or contests at a time? If I use three mini uniques prior to lock, should I use the same after late swap / running contest sims? Okay, so a couple questions here. Go through them one at a time. First question. For NBA DFS late swap, is it recommended to check the option to force the original lineup? I'm almost positive this toggle is off by default now, and therefore I would say that it is not recommended to check the option. So what the toggle does is it basically always gives you the original to make it easy to see, one, how that lineup's ROI has changed based on new sims that have run, and then two, to easily compare it to the new lineups that were built, right? A lot of people sometimes feel strongly about their original lineup, and they always want it to be an option because they don't want to feel like they're being forced to change it, right? So having it just allows you to see it, allows you to see the updated and changed ROIs, and then allows you to continue to use that lineup if you so choose, right? If the toggle is off, it's not to say you won't get that lineup again, but it won't be an option by default, right? We won't automatically make it an option for you. Instead, what would have to happen is the lineup would have to come up organically again in the Sims when we're building out your late swap. And if it comes up again, if it grades out well again, then it'll show up as the optimal swap option if the toggle is indeed off. All right. Next question. Do you recommend doing late swaps all at the same time or one contest at a time? I would say all at the same time. You know, doing late swaps contest by contest is really only feasible if you're playing like, I don't know, 1 to 3 contests a night. And even then, I don't think you have to do that. You know, your pool is typically big enough to swap more than one contest at a time. The only time I would suggest doing one contest at a time is maybe you're playing, you know, 250 maxes and you're on the starter plan and, you know, you have a pool of 500 lineups available to you. If, you know, that's you, right? Maybe you're playing the 5 cent 150 max and the 25 cent 150 max on FanDuel, right? Your swaps, the amount of lineups that you're going to be able to build for your swap options is going to be lower since you need 300 lineups out of 500. So in that case, you know, it's probably a good opportunity to do two separate swaps, one for each 150 max. So you get more swap options per contest, right? So that's probably the only time I'd recommend swapping contest by contest. All right. Last question. If I use 3 min uniques prior to lock, should I use the same after late swap / running contest sims? I think 3 is like a fine baseline to start with. The optimal answer really is to come in to even your autofill, right? It's going to be autofill. And what I would do is I would change the uniques and then save and then see how my aggregate metrics change, you know, my projection, my ROI. And then you can just resave over and over again, right? Like, okay, these are my ROI and projection aggregate metrics at 1 unique. What is it at 2? What is it at 3? So you change it, you save. You change it, you save. And then you watch how your metrics change. You watch how your exposures update. And then you settle on the number that makes the most sense to you. So if you want to just stick with what you've been using, that's fine, right? But you're not 100% sure what the impact is if you go higher or lower, right? So for figuring out uniques in late swap, I would, you know, change the unique, save, analyze exposures, aggregate metrics, change the unique, save, analyze exposures and aggregate metrics, and do that repeatedly until you find the uniques that you ultimately want to use. So in general, that's going to be the best option. All right, next question. Is a 0-10 build still a thing to see what the optimal players are for the slate? It is a way to do it, yes. So the thing here, right, is that, you know, let's say I wanted to do that, like, for NBA. Like, okay, great. You know, I get, like, some optimal rates running 0-10 builds. But the question you got to ask yourself is, am I going to need the optimal lineup to win on this slate? And the answer is no. There are going to be tons of winning lineups across contests that are not the optimal, right? So is it a fine thing to do if you want to? Yes, you can run a build on 0-10, look at, you know, pool exposures, see what players are coming up the most often compared to their ownership. But remember that you're probably not going to need an optimal lineup to win, right? You're going to need the winning lineup. And, you know, those things are different depending on the number of games on the slate, typically the type of sport, etc. here. So it's not something we like actively recommend in any of our content, but it is something you could do if you want to get a better sense of like player quote unquote optimal rates. All right. Next question. If you filter lineups into trash and then run a contest sim against that build as your field, will the contest sim still include the trash lineups or is it just running against the whole pool? Good question. So it would be running against all the lineups in the build. So even though the lineups are in the trash, the lineups still get put into the contest sim because what if you remove them from the trash, then they're not going to have any values, right? So what you would want to do is probably something kind of like we talked about yesterday, which I'll show again here, is, you know, set your filters, put the lineups in the trash, however you see fit, right? And then once you do so, you know, switch to pool, right, which would have all of the remaining lineups that are not in the trash. download those with the save to CSV button, go to a new build, upload those lineups into this build, and then now your, you know, filtered lineups are going to be in this build with however many are were in your pool. And then now you can use those filtered lineups as your field, right? And then you would just go to the contest tab, change your field lineup source to build two instead of build one, and then run your contest sim. So this is how you would effectively have to ignore those trashed lineups. All right, next question. How to come up with the best studs and build a more balanced lineup? Good question. So, you know, there's a couple of things here, right? This means something different to everybody, right? So, you know, I'm going to answer this like the way it makes sense to me, right? But there's two things going on here, right? How to come up with the best studs and build a more balanced lineup. Kind of two things people in like the DFS industry, at least I would say, like, are kind of conflicting statements, right? Because there's like these two ideas for ways to build lineups. Number one is what people call stars and scrubs. And this would be like studs and scrubs kind of would go like along the same kind of word track there. So what those lineups are lineups where you are using high salary players. And then on the other side, you are using low salary players. Because, you know, it's a salary cap format, right? So it's like, hey, in order to get Nikola Jokic in a lineup, I am going to have to pay down in certain positions in order to be able to afford him and to fill out the rest of my lineup, right? So I just like, if I filter for lineups with Jokic, right? And I look at this lineup and this, you know, what would be something I would call a stars and scrubs type of lineup, right? I'm paying $11,900 salary for Jokic. And then because of that, I have to go and play, you know, a $3,300 salary player, a $3,400 salary player, a $3,500 salary player, and play all of these cheaper guys in order to be able to afford him, right? So in that lineup, I had three players under 4K. In this top lineup that I'm looking at right now, this would be what I would consider a more balanced lineup, right? This is what people would call a more balanced lineup. And the reason is you're not paying up too high for any one individual player, and you're not paying too far down for any individual player here either, right? In this example, I don't have any player over 10K salary, and I don't have any player under a 4K salary, right? So no 3K range players, no double-digit salary type players in like the 10K, 11K range here, right? I have a 9,900 and I have a 4,200. People would call this like a more balanced lineup, right? SaberSim is going to give you a mix of both, and it's going to all depend on the sims that we pull, right? And you're going to find lineups that are one way, and you're going to find lineups that are the other way, right? You can always search through these and sift through them and find lineups that you like and find lineups you don't like. You know, if you're scrolling through this, right, and you like a certain lineup, you can always use the lock icon on it. If there is one piece of this lineup you don't like, you can use the pencil icon. You can go in and, you know, manually change one or two players and then save the lineup. And then that new updated version of the lineup will be part of your set of lineups. So there's a lot of ways that you can, you know, manipulate the lineups. SaberSim is going to give you a balance. One of the probably best things to do is just sort by exposure after you run your build and then look at the players that are coming up. And if you're like, hey, I want to see lineups that don't use a high salary player, okay, go in and use the minus magnifying glass on players over that threshold, right? And it's going to filter down the lineups that don't include those high salary players. So that's one way you can think about using that. All right, next question. Should I change the min uniques when using the autofill option? I would say yes. You know, we think that using min uniques is valuable in both direct fill and autofill. I'll tell you guys how I use it. I typically will go into this menu when I have an entries file uploaded. I will look at the contest that I have the most entries in only, and then I will figure out what is a good min unique number for that contest. And then I will use that number across the board in autofill. So a couple different ways to do it. You could just use that one number for all of your contests. I've talked about using a scaling method before. Like, hey, you know, I'm playing 150 max and then I'm playing 220 maxes. Well, in direct fill, the good number for my mini uniques was 3 for my 150 max. Maybe I'm just going to crank these other two up to 4 because I need less lineups. I don't need 150 for these next two contests. I only need 20 lineups. Well, you know, the difference between 150 and 20 is a big difference. It's a way different pool to lineup ratio. So you're probably safer going one higher for 20 lineups than if you had another 150 max contest. You could also do that example, right? You could actually just go in here and do it manually and see what number's good for the 20 max. But I've done that experiment enough times to know that I could just go from 3. If my 150 max is 3, it's probably fine to go 4 for my 20 maxes, 5 for my 3 maxes, et cetera there. All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Jumping back to the Office Hours channel. And we got one more question here. So let's get this one queued up. All right. This one came in from Drummer Boy. And question says, if I make a rule stating I want no more than one unconfirmed player in a lineup, will that make the simulator only pick from teams that have confirmed lineups, or will it still consider projected starters from later games? It will not consider projected starters from later games. So this filter, when you go into the filters, you go to, you know, show players with status is confirmed or something like that. Anytime you use this, the players have to have a green check mark in the status column in order to be used, right? So your rule like, hey, I want no more than one unconfirmed player. It will not consider players whose starting lineups are not out. So probably not the type of rule you want to use. I'm trying to think of ways that you could do this. You would probably have to just like go in and like uncheck starters, or if you have the ability, filter by projection, filter by minutes, do something. I mean, typically your bench players are going to be projected for less than your starters, right? Like if I just look at Dallas here in the last game on the slate, you know, Kyrie's a starter, PJ Washington's a starter, Gafford's a starter, Klay Thompson's a starter. I don't know who's starting between Dinwiddie, Marshall. It looks like Dinwiddie has the upper hand on like Grimes and Hardy, but I'm not 100% sure who's going to start between like Dinwiddie and Marshall. So, you know, it would be like close, right? But you probably could get a projection filter to just get you, you know, 80% of the way there, and then you make some fine-tune adjustments to players from that point on. Even if you wanted to maybe avoid questionable players, right? Like, hey, you would set something like, hey, show me players with status is not, you know, and you do questionable, right? That's another way to do it. So you could try something like that. This would probably be a less risky option. All right. Next question. Eric said, how to make a rule to use no more than two players under a salary of $3,500. Good question. So I just go to rules, go to add new rule, and I would say group auto, use no more than two, and then I would just add a requirement, and then I would say salary less than $3,500. So what this rule says is use no more than two players whose salary is less than $3,500. And then basically what it does, if I save it as a manual, you'll be able to see here. If I click this drop down, click this pencil, it goes and grabs all of the players under $3,500 salary and then puts them in one big group and says use no more than two of these 123 players on the slate. All right. Good question there. And we are all caught up here. Cool. So appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll be back in about 20 minutes here for our build review show. Until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.